This is Don Hussig with Cancer Action Network, and you're listening to Loving the Earth, Pollution Free Radio. This evening, we have a wonderful guest here on the program. His name is Albert Dumont. He's an Algonquin elder. Good evening, Albert.
Good evening, Don. How are you tonight?
I feel very happy to be speaking with you, and I feel really good about, you know, where this program is taking us. Albert's home is in a place that he calls, that the Algonquin call, Kitiganzebe. Can you tell us what that word means?
It means garden river.
It's such a beautiful name for a place to live. I want to talk with you just to basically to receive your guidance in some things that are very important to, I believe, to all of the people living on the earth at this time. You know, these very important things about how people can change in their hearts, and then based upon that change what they do so that we're moving away from, we're stopping this poisoning of the earth that has taken place for such a very long time now, and which has created so much bad health, so much disease, which has created such a burden upon, you know, many of us. And I just would like to know, what guidance, what from your spiritual vantage point, you know, from your great spiritual experience and knowledge, what can you share with the people that will be listening to this program about following a path that leads them closer and closer to the earth so that they truly love the earth?
Well, for me, it's a very simple thing. If a person is provided for from something, whether it's your parents or whoever's looking after you, you should love those people that are looking after you. And if the provider happens to be Mother Earth, which she is, Mother Earth provides for us. We're able to live because of what we take from the land, whether it's corn or potatoes or the meat that we eat as well, and the water that we drink, and all those things that nourish us and sustain us. It all comes from Mother Earth. So it only makes good sense to do all we can to keep the land healthy. Because if we fail to do that, well, then surely our days here are numbered. And I think if anybody that's got a mind and able to think will understand that and know their place as a human being. Because all the things of the land, all the things in the forest will live very well without human beings. But we cannot live without them. And it's that simple.
It is very beautiful, and it's I just the simplicity of it, and the, you know, just the strength of it is very encouraging. Do you believe that people are changing? Do you sense anything from, you know, the people that you come in contact with and that you know of and experience? Are people beginning to change so that we can have hope that the earth will be able to recover from this poisoning that's taken place over the last, you know, many years, these many decades now, really, of lots of chemicals being, you know, used and dumped and misused and just poisoned, you know, the earth being poisoned and polluted by these chemicals. Do you see any things that are causing you to have good hope about how things will come to be in the future?
I do. What I see is people wanting to change, but they don't know how. And that's for a lot of people, they just sit there and stare blankly, and they don't. They ask themselves, "Well, what can I do? What should I do?" And they need somebody to lead them. They need somebody to make them stand up and be counted as someone who's going to be a protector of the land. one way that I've put it to them is the fact that my ancestors called themselves the people of the Great River. And that's who I'm descendant of those. And the river that they spoke of was the river that's known today as the Ottawa River. And the Ottawa River is in bad shape right now from pollution. There's sewage and chemicals and all kinds of poisons are traveling in the water. And the people here in this part of Ontario and Quebec know that the river is in poor health. And what I've said to people is, if you were as physically sick as that river is sick, you would be brought to the emergency room, and the doctors would just shake their heads and they'd say to you, there's no more I can do for you. And whenever I say it like that, it seems to jog them and to understand the seriousness of the health of the Ottawa River. And the Ottawa River is not dead yet, but I believe that the rituals and ceremonies that have been here in this continent for thousands of years can bring restore the health of that river. I really believe that.
Well, I'm really hopeful that those rituals and those ceremonies will take place and that the river will be restored. And I talk to people, and some of them, they just kind of give this response as if, you know, how fast do we need to go? I believe, I have this sense of urgency. I feel that we need to do these things quickly and make some, you know, good speed with these things, because it just seems so, well, for the example of, say, with our group, this Cancer Action New York, that, you know, that I am the leader of, I just feel so strongly that, you know, we just got to make these changes happen quickly, because then less people would get exposed to these many pollutants that have been connected with causing cancer. And I just feel like, you know, people don't want to get cancer. It's a horrible disease. And, you know, just to not to do other than to move quickly, it seems like it's just letting down so many people. And like what you're saying, this kind of like letting down the river and not just getting this done so that things can be like they were so good in the past when everything was so much healthier. You know, when health was the main way that things were, you know, without all this poison and everything.
Well, Don, what I believe is that people are so busy nowadays, today than they were 50 years ago and 100 years ago or whatever, and they hardly have time for even to concern themselves for their spiritual beliefs. It's a busy, busy world. Like that old saying of faster than a New York minute, well, then the whole world is living by that minute now. Everything is just moving too fast, and people are forgetting what's really important, like family values and the health of the land and the health of the water. They're just going above their head, the importance of it, and people need to slow down and get their priorities straight. And they need to do it now, and they need to understand that the future generations are going to suffer. Like, I don't want to see the day where people are living in domes, you know, that are 50 miles long and 200 feet high or whatever, and that's how we have to live in the future. And I think that's where we're headed if we don't give our heads a shake and realize what's happening. And because of the chemicals and all the sickness that is in the air that we breathe and in the waters and in the food that we eat, preservatives and chemicals and those things, that's what's causing cancer. And processed food and junk food like potato chips and tortilla chips and stuff that you buy in a bag, if a person is eating a lot of that, they're looking for trouble down the road, and food like bacon and things like this that are really have no nutritional value other than to clog our arteries and make our bodies weak and to fight the other things that might cause cancer and things like this. That's what I believe anyway.
I agree with you totally. There's just so much. Food is truly this really huge part of what, you know, we put in our bodies every day. It's so important to, like, you know, the overall body health. And if we put poison, you know, that's in the food into our bodies every day, what would be expected to have happened, to get sick when you put poison in your body just over and over and over again. So I'm very much in agreement with you about that. You taught me, you shared with me this beautiful ceremony of this thing of using water, the first contact with water in the day, and how that this is this spiritual ceremony that helps to create this good energy and this kind of, you know, spiritual well-being for the day. Can you share that with the listeners, you know, here this evening?
Yes. Well, if all people, whenever they make that first contact with water in the morning when they're going to wash their bodies, and if you bring that water up to your face and you splash that water on your face and at the same time you give thanks to Great Spirit or to God or to whoever they want to pray to, and give thanks that they have the ability to see, because there's people that are blind, be thankful that they have the ability to smell, because some people cannot do that, and be thankful that they can speak, and that be thankful that they can hear, and be thankful for their good thoughts, and how they're going to communicate with their loved ones, and to whoever that they're going to cross paths with, their words will be strong and good and healing to whoever. And then to also to give thanks that their heart is beating in a good way, and that their lungs are working, and on it goes. And then you're acknowledging and honoring water as well as your own health when you do that, and it makes you very conscious then of the importance of water, because without water, human beings will die off.
Well, I've been doing that. I don't do it every day, but I do it very, very frequently, and I just feel so. It is very powerful. I just feel so good once that I have done that, and then I will go and dance and think about, you know, this closeness to the spiritual parts of the world, and it's just been very, you know, good for me doing that. You've just recently published a book. Its title is Of Trees and Their Wisdom. Can you share some of that poetry with us, Albert?
Yes, I can. The before I move on to that, though, I'd like to read this poem that, because we're on the topic of water right now, so I think,
okay,
if you don't mind, I'll read
that's
this
good
first. And this is from another book, but I call it I Have Seen in a Dream. I have seen in a dream that place from which the sacred water spilled, and life-giving raindrops urged the fruit trees to blossom as the plan of our Creator willed. I have seen in a dream that place from which Mishomas sang a song of honor for the lifeblood of Mother Earth, and to quench his thirst with fresh and clear water was his right from birth. I have seen in a dream that place from which the heartbeat of the drum rose above the roar of the greatest falls, and prayer and promise were in harmony with the sound of a loon's call. But awakened, I lament for our sons and daughters when I see the things pollution kills. years ago.
That's a very powerful and beautiful poem, and it's, you know, it's certainly so relevant and so good for what is, you know, at hand right now with this, like you're saying about the Ottawa River needing people to stand up and care enough to do something, you know, basically, you know, changing themselves, getting other people to change, just calling out for government to do its proper part, its, you know, its needed part in protecting the earth and the water and the river. That's a very, very beautiful poem.
This this next poem from my book of Trees and Their Wisdom, and this was written for with those people in mind, those people who really care for the land, and it's called Our Voices, a Forest. Our voices are as a forest being destroyed. When the cedar is gone, who then will speak of our spirituality? When the oak is gone, who then will speak of our strength? When the maple is gone, who then will speak of our generosity? When the birch is gone, who then will speak of our creativity? When the pine is gone, who then will speak of our legends? When the forest is gone, who then will speak for the first peoples? All that will be left is a plantation of falsehoods. O Great Spirit, our voices are as a forest being destroyed. And that's the end of that poem.
That is so, that's just so cool. You know, just, I love the way you're kind of finding this wisdom, you know, exactly like your title of your book, you know, this speaking to us, this wisdom that is in trees, such a, you know, it's such a great help to have that kind of thinking and this kind of words. I just really do feel like that if we are rising, if people are changing and starting to, you know, I'm really hopeful that the kind of change that, say, took place in the Renaissance or in the Greek Golden Age or some of these other special times, that kind of time would come to be happening right now. And, you know, that we would be a part of that. The people that are living now would be a part of some great time of people advancing and becoming, you know, on this more beautiful, more spiritual, more mindful, more, you know, just good, spirited level, you know, this kind of way of living and existing, you know, just to be in a higher level. And that kind of poetry is certainly what, you know, a big part of what will help to, you know, make that come about.
Well, you know, whenever people are, they say that in hard times, they say, oh, you still need to count your blessings. And everybody knows of that saying. Well, I believe that trees are a blessing. And I wrote this called A Blessing. A tree is a blessing. A blessing you can touch and smell and even taste in tea. A blessing you can talk to and confide in. A blessing in whose shade you can find healing. When you search for wisdom, remember, a tree is a blessing. And I really believe that trees are a blessing.
Well, I've always felt so strongly about, we have a lot of, it's like this quite nearly pure stand of these cedar trees that are in the St. Lawrence River Valley. We're, you know, my home farm is down near Ogdensburg, the city of Ogdensburg. It's across the river pretty much from, you know, between Prescott and Cardinal. And it's not right on the river, but it's, you can see the river from upstairs in the house, you know, looking north across this cedar forest. And the cedars, when I go there, I have oftentimes felt like it was this good place to be, to listen for something coming from beyond what I know about, you know, for these good, powerful things to speak to my heart. And I would sometimes go back there and just sit there and listen, or lie down on the ground and just, you know, just dream almost, and just try to find some guiding. And it was truly in this, this an open area in that cedar forest where I first had this sense that dancing, for me, was this really special way of, basically, I just thought of it as joining together with the earth somehow, that in this dancing that I do in the forest, that I would come somehow able to, like, just interact more to my fullest best with the with nature, with the earth. And I've continued to do it, and it's just wonderful how it seems to just bring people to me in a certain kind of way, especially doing, like, say, I'll do an information table at a college about pollution and the environment and protecting the earth and cancer prevention. And when I dance there, oftentimes people ask me about that, and then we'll just, well, then we'll talk further about the cancer prevention and the pollution prevention. And it is truly so much this thing to have the forest to dance in. That's where I find this goodness to, learn and do with the dancing. And I just feel like I dance so much in the forest that I feel so peaceful and tranquil and just kind of calm and good about then doing that kind of dancing out where the people are and where I'm trying to, kind of communicate with people about these things we're talking about. And so I certainly agree with you about this thing of trees being such a blessing and so special in our lives. And I would, I would have missed so much if it hadn't been for that cedar forest there. It's probably about, approximately 100 acres of just this wonderful, quite large cedar trees. It's a very beautiful place.
I can tell you something that I've been doing since I was a little boy, and my memory goes to about whenever I was 8 years old, whenever I first did this, and it was whenever at the time of spring, when there's still small patches of snow in the forest, because the forest is dense and the sunlight can't get in there to melt the snow, so there's still patches of snow here and there in the forest. But to walk barefoot on the spongy earth, because the snow is melted and the earth is thawed, and whenever you walk barefoot, and with each step, just give thanks to Mother Earth that you're there, you're a human being, and that you're walking on her softly, and that you feel her healing energy in the bottoms of your feet. And it's really special to do that. I really urge you to do that, because it's a spiritual experience, and it's a very much a healing experience, because those pores just absorb that rich healing energy that's there from the land at that time of the year, when there's so much taking place with the budding leaves and fawns and cupbearers and all this, and birds, songbirds with their nests and things like this. It's a very special time, and to put your bare feet down on the land in the forest at that time, I really think everybody should try that.
Do you have any poetry about that, that special thing that you've done?
Well, there's one, I think if people would think about this, because one of the things that I contemplated once about if a newborn baby could make a statement to the world at the time that the baby was born, what would those words be? And this is what I came up with. I call it "I Remember the Heartbeat," because the baby, as they're growing in the mother's womb, that's what they hear all the time, is the heartbeat of their mother. So I wrote this. I was born loving of humankind, of bird life, of plant life, and of colors. I was born loving of the legged, of the crawlers, of the swimmers, and of the wind. I was born loving of the sun, of the moon, of the stars, and of the rocks. I was born loving of the rivers, of the streams, of the lakes, and of the rain. I was born loving of all goodness, for I remember the heartbeat of my mother. Now I seek your knowledge and wisdom. Give me teachings to keep fresh my memories of the heartbeat. For without the inspiration of the heartbeat, my circle would surely shatter, and I would forevermore be afraid. So I wrote that about that. And I think if people taught about that when they were born, they were loving of everything. They weren't corrupted by vices and bad thoughts or hate or racism or anything like that. They were so innocent and loving, and because they'd been so well looked after and with the heartbeat of their mother as a constant companion. Now, to me, if a person could just meditate on that fact at times when they're suffering or times when they need direction, just go back to that time and realize that they were once pure and full of love for everything. It would help, I think, to make them feel more for as a human being, because people are forgetting how to think as human beings anymore. It's technology is damaging us, I think, our human emotions.
Yes. Yeah, really. I feel that love is such a, when I'm dancing in the forest, and I do it every day, when I'm doing that, the truly the most that comes to me is this thing of that people would just love enough, you know, that they would, you know, they would change to where, you know, in these new times, and I'm really hoping that, you know, these new times would just blossom and grow into this very beautiful way of people living. And it seems that the love is the key in it. You know, that if people were just to just be so full, like you're saying, that they were born that way, if somehow they could find their way back to that and just be so full of love, that that love was for the earth and for the other people, and that we're just like, just, you know, just, you know, neat science would be the love generation, and it would be just wonderful if, you know, we could, all of us, you know, just all these many generations, you know, and the different people and the different religions and the different, you know, kind of nationalities and the different races and all these things, and people that, you know, just the people you live near and the families and all these things would just become filled with love now, and that would be just, I think that would be, you know, very close to this higher level of us existing on.
Yeah. I wrote this one, it's in my tree book, and I call it the Man and the Tree. And it's a man who's making an address to a tree, because he really believes that the tree can feel. Compared to your strength, I am weak. Compared to your beauty, I am ugly. Compared to your fragrance, my scent is stale. Compared to your whispers, my voice is garbled. Compared to your wisdom, I am confused. Compared to your awareness of spirituality, I am lost and searching. For I am only a man who has fallen from my purpose. I believe that we have a purpose as human beings, and our community, our people have a purpose, and individually we have a purpose, but people have forgotten that, and they don't, you know. I was a bricklayer by trade, Don, and a mason, but that wasn't my purpose. That was something I did to make a living, to pay my bills, and there's a big difference between bill paying and your real purpose here. That's what people need to ponder that. They need to think about what their purpose here is And what kind of a world are they leaving when they leave this place, that this physical life that lasts just a short while? Even if you live to be 100 years old, your life is short here.
It's just so very short. That's what, you know, it seems like that's almost this tragic part of, you know, being a person. And maybe I'm wrong in wanting to have more time, but it just seems like you just start figuring out how to, you know, live in a more, you know, mindful and spiritual and, you know, good for bringing change kind of way. And then life's half over, and then it just goes faster and faster. And, you know, as far as just the sense of time passing, my dad is always saying how quickly it seems like the time passed as he got older and older, and I'm sure he knew what he was talking about. He knows what he's talking about. And I wish somehow that life could be a little longer, but it is what it is. And I guess the key is to just make the most of every instant of it, and just, you know, thankfulness and love of it, and like you say, living in this purposeful and knowing your purpose and doing your purpose kind of way of living. I feel good about that, so I would like to be able to just, and hopefully with the spiritual parts of existence, you know, I just want to feel like that. I don't want just it to end and not know how it turns out, like say like 1,000 years from now, or like some, you know, length of time that really is significant, you know, kind of like in the history of the existence of the earth and the people of the earth. I'm just really hoping, you know, I try really hard to believe in a spirit world and spirituality and a spirit life, and it just seems like so beautiful if, you know, that is the way things are. And I'm really hopeful that, and I try really hard to believe that there are these good spirits and that they, you know, have this existence beyond just this, what we know about in the physical world and in this world that we're living in, is our own individual lives. And I just hope to be able to join together with them, you know, when the time comes for dying, and then it would be possible still to, you know what's going on and look down or look around and see and know how things go on with the future generations and the earth and how it will all turn out, you know. I'm just so hopeful to be like that.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that about purpose. And I guess that's why our paths crossed, and I'm glad that they did.
Yeah, I'm so glad you've given me so many beautiful. It's beyond ideas. You've given me these beautiful things to do and ways of looking at, you know, the forest and life, and I certainly want to read that book of yours. It's just this thing of your mind being such that it recognizes that there's this wisdom in these trees that, you know, you have been with. It's just such a wonderful thing to be able to touch, you know, and be close to.
I'll tell you something about a tree, and I speak of it in my book. A friend of mine has this beautiful maple tree in his yard, and about 60 years ago, he said that his father backed into it with a timber truck, and the tree at that time was only about 15 feet tall. And it almost knocked the tree down with the force of the truck backing up. But they didn't know whether the tree was going to survive, and they left it alone. And that was 60 years ago. And today, that tree is as beautiful as any maple you see anywhere. And what it did was the limbs on its damaged side grew longer and bigger than the limbs opposite. And it balanced itself. And now, from a distance, it looks perfectly balanced. And when you come close, you see that the stem is pushed you know, it's leaning, but still the tree is beautiful, and it's strong, and it's healthy, and it's balanced. And what that maple is telling to anyone who cares to know it, that it suffered greatly in the past when it was young. It suffered, but it mended, and today it's balanced. And it's telling us, no matter how much you've suffered in your younger days, that you can still balance yourself in mind, body, and spirit, just like it has. It has ended itself. And it's a great teacher, and it's very wise, I think, in a way.
Yes, it certainly is. I'm just so glad that you shared that with us, because, you know, I myself feel it, you know, a considerable amount of suffering in some of the younger years of my life. And it is good to hear you say that, because it does, it just kind of strengthens me. I do feel that I have found a lot of balance in this adulthood and in these days of my life that are now. But to hear you say it, and to hear how you can like relate that to the tree, it certainly is more of a sense of this balance being something that has, you know, that I've been able to accomplish. And I'm sure a lot of other people will be glad to know that kind of thing is possible, and to kind of like be, you know, kind of like, you know, just strengthened in their knowledge of how far they've come, and, you know, having some balance in their life, even though they may have, you know, had some difficult times when they were young.
That's right. And before the interview ends, I'd like to read this poem that's in my book of trees. As a matter of fact, it's the last poem in this book, which is 96 pages long, and I call it the Wordy, and it's I wrote this. This pretty much says it all about how I feel about the forest. I will turn my face towards the sun and say, "Grandfather, in your fire I find my strength. I will allow the winds to gently stroke my thoughts, and I will say, Father, oh how you make me wise. I will gaze upon the full circle of the moon and say, Grandmother, through you I see the love of God. I will lay down on soft meadow grasses and say, Mother, heal me and teach me to respect all the things on this earth. And only after I have done all these things will I be worthy to walk among the trees." And that's the end of that poem.
Very beautiful.
And if anybody, I don't know if anybody that's hears this interview, but if they want to check out my website, it's albertdumont.com. That's a worldwide web.
Well, that's good to know, because I'm sure there will be people that want to check it out and that want to learn more about the knowledge that you have to share. Thanks a lot, Albert. It's been wonderful talking to you, and, you know, bless you for being the beautiful mind and the great thinker and the writer that you are, and for being an elder and just somebody that's there for like these suffering young people or these suffering old people, any of the people that are in need of good guidance, that you are there for them.
I'll say this, Don. I think you might have mentioned before that I had a very serious construction accident over 18 years ago, and I fell 43 feet and I broke my back and I crushed vertebrae and cracked vertebrae, and my spine was cracked above and below the damaged vertebrae, and I had broken bones and ripped skin and even collapsed nerves. And because of that accident, I had chronic pain, but I whenever I'm having a bad day, I offer that pain up so that somebody else in this country who's contemplating suicide because of the suffering that they're experiencing, I offer my pain up so that person will get strong again and have a happy life and overcome that time of sadness that's making them think of suicide, and then that way I feel that I've suffered for my suffering is not in vain, that somebody has gained strength in it someplace in this country, and I really believe that, and it's really helps me to deal with the physical pain. Physical pain, you know, is a cakewalk compared to emotional pain and even spiritual pain, because people are suffering spiritually because, you know, there's such a thing as spiritual pollution, and people need to think about that too, and because that's, once they understand that about suffering, that they will be more respectful and more passionate and compassionate for others. That's what I really believe in myself.
I, you know, your, what you believe is just so good for everybody. Thanks for giving us, you know, what the, you know, all that you have to give, Albert. It's wonderful to have your words here with us.
Well, thank you, and you take good care of yourself, and we'll talk to you again someday soon.
Thanks, Albert.
Okay, good night.
Good night.